Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. This week we have back, by popular demand, two guests who were on together in the past. Mm-hmm. What's it been, Susan? About six to eight months ago. Yeah, and I have to tell you, these are among our most popular guests. Now, there's a lot of competition for that prize, but I think the reason these guests have been popular before and will be now is that they want to talk about financial matters as they relate to people who are on the threshold of retirement and those who've gone past that point and are now looking at other financial issues as they've gotten further down the road in aging. So there's a lot of rich material to cover today, and we want to get through as much as we can. And what we don't get through today, we're going to actually pick up with another show. So it's our intention to make this a total of two shows, because we know this information will be of interest to you as well as of use to you. Okay, Susan, why don't you reintroduce our guests?
We are very happy to have with us today Todd Etkin, who is a financial consultant and certified financial planner, providing expertise on issues affecting high net worth clients. He's served as a wealth advisor for BB&T Bank and a financial advisor for UBS Financial Services. In addition, Todd has worked in his family business. And we are also joined today by Grant Roberts. He is a wealth advisor and certified financial planner with the Roberts & Kohler Group, which is now a part of the Hilliard Lyons, a Baird company. So they are now doing a little get together with that. He assists clients with investment selection, their specific needs, and reviewing long-term planning and goals. And he has worked as a financial analyst for BMO Harris Bank in Chicago. And he said, after five winters in Chicago, I am done with this. I am done for cheering for the Cubs, and has returned to Louisville, where he enjoys time with his wife and two kids.
We're excited to be here. Thank you all.
And hopefully cheering now for Cardinals.
That's right.
From Louisville.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so let's start out by talking about this whole idea of preparation for retirement. I mean, it's one of those weighty questions that people have. And now the demographic tidal wave that we're looking at, you know, we're looking at all these people who are making kind of threshold decisions similar to the major decisions perhaps they made as young men and women. You know, what is my career going to be? Well, now this is a sort of, it's like a career. It can be 30 years or more that people might anticipate in retirement. Talk a little bit about what you've seen among your clients as they make preparation and decisions for retirement.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for that. And you know, what we have seen and what we try to coach our clients getting ready for retirement is that you work your entire life and you build up a name for yourself, and many times that name comes from what you do or what job you're in. And then once you retire, if you're not prepared for that, then you can be very depressed, because you have to have a purpose in life to get up out of bed. You can't just get up every day and watch Oprah or whatever the show of the day might be. It might work for a week while you're on vacation, but after that, you have to have a reason to get out of bed. And we coach our clients to think through that. What might that purpose be? It might be a part-time job. It might mean volunteering somewhere. It might mean taking care of your grandkids. There can be all kinds of purposes, but it has to be a reason. The other thing that we really focus on, too, not only on the financial part of it, but once you are getting close, what have you done? Are you eliminating your debt? Is your portfolio conservative enough at that time? Do you have enough money? When do you start Social Security? When does Medicare kick in? So we start looking at, you know, when are we going to start preparing for that? And the third thing, which we have to teach people, is that it's okay to spend your money. People grow their entire lives, and we save, and it's very hard to switch that switch to now we have to spend what we saved.
That is a lot of wisdom, particularly on the subject of spending.
It's tough.
I mean, it's lifetime habits of not spending. And what people end up often doing is dying with this money.
True.
And it's fine if they live the lifestyle they wanted to live, but to the extent that they were making compromises and they were tightening their belts continually, habits that have been good habits for decades, but they go out of this world with the same habit.
That is so true. And it is tough talking to people off the bridge, off the ledge, thinking I'm running out of money when really they should be spending a little bit more and enjoying those things. The other thing, which is huge, is that remember that between age 65 and 75 are the years that you should spend the money. Because 75, one fall, one illness, you can't go back to that bucket list because now you can't do it. So sometimes we might, you know, suggest our clients, hey, spend a little bit more these years where you can actually get out with your spouse, with your family, and do the things that you've always wanted to do, because there comes a time where you really can't do it.
But what do you say to that person that says, but what if I live to age 95 and I run out of money? That's always the lingering fear, it seems.
It is. And so what we do is we do a financial plan for almost all of our retirees and says, okay, this is where it's going to work. And if we have a bad market, this is what it's going to look like. So it kind of puts something on paper that gives you an idea of what it looks like. But the other thing we have noticed is that clients spend more money in that 65 to 75 age group. But once you get to be 75, 85 years old, you're not spending a whole lot of money. Now, you'll hear the media say, gosh, you're going to spend your money, and it costs so much to be retired. But really, if you start looking at your mom and dad or my mom and dad, they were spending really their Social Security check because they had no debt. They really didn't go out there and eat that much more. There just wasn't a whole lot for them to do. Now, medical expenses might have been a little bit more, but not a lot more, because Medicare today is an amazing health insurance.
And, you know, there is, though, that elephant in the room that we should at least address a little bit here, and that's that issue of long-term care, where some fear that they might spend years in a nursing home. Statistically, that's not likely to happen. Meaning that I think that the last statistic I read was like 2.8 years.
Right, 2.5 is what we use.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that means a lot of people won't spend any time, and some will spend more than 2.5. Mm-hmm. So there is that fear, but I guess I would rush to say that unless it's a absolute priority to leave a lot of money or other assets to your children, unless your children are dependent on you in that way to leave them a lot of money, then – you know, the worst case scenario is you're out of money and you qualify for Medicaid. So you do get those costs paid.
Yeah, and, you know, so many times what the clients that we've worked with, they're thinking about their children. They're really not thinking about them running out of money.
Yeah.
They're thinking about, hey, I won't be able to leave Sally anything. And it's very hard for them to think that way.
That's often
huge. Mm-hmm. But exactly what you said. It's really the middle-income people who need long-term care insurance because they have something that they could actually save for their kids, because now if you went in a nursing home, it would affect them. If you have no money, it doesn't matter. You have nothing to lose. You're going to go in, Medicaid's going to kick in, and it's fine. If you have plenty of money, you can self-insure that. So there's a select few that actually you would really need the long-term care insurance for, or using a good elder care attorney to protect some of those assets.
Yeah, it's those people in the middle, the middle class. You know, if you're poor, as you said, you're covered. If you're wealthy, you pay for it. But if you're in the middle class and you really do want to leave something to your kids or a surviving spouse, then you do worry about, what if I need those long-term care costs paid? But it is something that haunts people in a way that sadly seems to prevent them from enjoying their lives. Yeah. At the time in their life when their goal has always been, all those working days they were getting up at 6 and 7 in the morning going off to work but thinking someday I'm going to be retired and I'm going to kick my feet up and I'm not going to worry. And they end up retiring and worrying.
That is so true. Golly. I don't know the answer to that. I think that's a generation that is used to saving and not spending money. I think, you know, depending on who you are, some people don't have any problem spending it at all. But
those are the people who will easily qualify for Medicaid.
Exactly. They won't have any trouble at all.
But I think it is a mindset. I mean, they've spent their entire life doing the responsible thing.
Right.
And the responsible thing would be to continue to provide for myself rather than to rely on government assistance or my children. You know, I think that's the other piece of this. God forbid, I do not want my kids to have to take care of me. And so they'll skimp and they'll save. And as Joe sometimes will say, they run around turning off the lights and turning the heat up and that type of thing when they really perhaps do. But they really need to talk to someone about finding out how much am I really going to need? And that's the hard question to answer.
Yeah, and plenty of financial advisors can help you with that. You know, mm-hmm. we can use different financial programs that can kind of say, hey, you know, if you spend X amount of dollars, how much it would cost you in a nursing home. If you went in there, we usually use age 80 and they stay in there till age 83. Just kind of give you a ballpark because you can't insure for everything. It would cost you too much money. So you have to assume some risk, and that's one of those risks. But in the end, life's going to go on no matter what you do. And even if you make the wrong decisions, life's going to still go on, and you're going to make it through it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't want to think that somebody who retires is going to be continually worrying about issues such as, I'm thinking of a family member who you know, Todd, mm-hmm. Who actually canceled their newspaper subscriptions and went to the library to read. And this was somebody who had, you know, maybe $1 million or so, give or take. And I think it was a lifetime of being frugal that actually intensified. It intensified upon retirement and rather than becoming more liberal. And I think it comes back to the point that you're making is that it's okay to be a little risk averse at a time when you're vulnerable to things going sideways or south. You're not as resilient, perhaps, for a variety of reasons as you were when you were 30 or 40. So I think we're all on the same page that you can't afford to be reckless. But at the same time, there is a conservatism that's so extreme that you plan for boogeymen that aren't going to appear and which diminish the quality of your life for decades.
Yeah.
So whenever, let's go back then to that hypothetical client that you guys see every day, a person who's aging, they're getting ready to retire. What are the steps, kind of that routine checklist that you'll suggest to them mm-hmm. as they're preparing to leave their jobs?
The first thing we do is do a complete financial plan. So we look at all their life insurance. We look at their wills and their estate documents to make sure those are all set up correctly. We look at their expenses. I mean, you know, how much will they need to actually live on retirement? We look at if they're going to retire before age 65, before Medicare kicks in, what's an independent insurance policy going to cost and how's that going to fit into their budget? We look at their debt. You know, you can have a really safe and comfortable retirement if you don't have any debt. Well, debt kind of puts a wrench in the cog a little bit. So you have to focus on that too. And maybe there's times we say, hey, why don't you work these next 3 years really hard and let's eliminate this. And then you can retire very comfortably. You know, we look at, you know, how many kids they have. And do they want to leave the kids money? Is that important to them?
How often is that a big deal?
It is huge. I mean, so many of the older people feel a responsibility that I have noticed that say, hey, we want to make sure, and it may not be a lot of money, but it's that thing that at the end of life saying, hey, we did leave them something, and they felt good about that. So life insurance can be that. You know, it doesn't have to be your assets. You could buy a life insurance policy that is what that purpose is. I know when my mother passed away, it was, 6 months after she passed away, and we just happened to be at her house one day, and we get a bill from an insurance company because no one knew about it. Well, we figured, well, if there's a bill, there must be a policy, and it was a $200,000 policy that nobody knew about. That's the other thing that we look at. Where are your documents? Who have you told where they are? So when things pass, you know, when you do pass away, someone knows where they are. The other thing my mother did was hide money in books. You know, so we're in her house cleaning everything out, dumping in a dumpster, and a book falls in. There's a $100 bill in it, and finally said, maybe we ought to look at some of these other books. And there's about $12,000 hidden in books.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and so those are good things to tell your kids that, hey, don't throw these books out there. You might find something in those. But, you know, the financial part of it is very important, number one. But we have different models that can kind of help you say, hey, this is where we think you're going to be. But going back to our initial thing, the biggest thing is being prepared to retire and where you're going to have a happy retirement is when you have a reason to be retired and you know what that's going to be, or you kind of build into it. You don't just stop doing everything, and maybe you start bringing things back, and now you're helping out at the library or a church, or you're, you know, my uncle drove funeral cars. Well, he knew everybody in the city by the end of the year because, mm-hmm. you know, everybody had relatives die, and he meets them, and he just loved doing that. So you have to have that purpose.
Huh. So then some people think that the financial advisor is all about money, but really it's mm-hmm. more like, to some extent, being a life coach if you're talking to people who are planning their lives when they retire. Because if you just talk about the money, then you're neglecting the bigger picture, which is feeling fulfilled.
Yeah, that's a great point, and the fact that you can get anybody to manage your money. You can go get a robo, whatever they call them. I call them robo-cops.
Software.
And they let the robo-cop manage your money. But who's that person going to be that's going to be that life coach? Who's going to be talking off the ledge when the market has gone down a little bit and you want to sell everything? You know, a good financial planner talks through all those different things with you. And that's the person you contact. You know, if you're going to buy a car, you know, Joe, your aunt, I mean, her biggest thing when once your uncle died was she wanted to buy a new Cadillac. Well, she couldn't hardly walk down the aisle to drive the Cadillac. So somebody had to kind of be there to say, you know, maybe it's not a good idea, but we're not going to tell you it's not a good idea. We're just going to prove it to you, because when she test drove it up and down the aisle, she wouldn't even go out on the street. She was afraid to go on the street. So she kind of learned by herself, but somebody had to tell her. That, you know, didn't have to tell her, just kind of help
her
witness
chance.
It, right,
yeah.
To understand that maybe that's not a good idea. And that's what a good financial planner will do, is be that life coach.
But that's hard to do. That's something that I find interesting, is that somebody can justify financially playing that sort of role in someone's life. Give people a sense, and this is shifting gears a little bit, but it's talking a little bit more about your industry, because I think people are interested in this. I think a lot of, we have some listeners, I'm sure, who are wealthy, and we have a lot of listeners who are middle class. And I'm wondering, for people who may have $1 million, they may have $2 million, but they're wondering, you know, when I get this advice, what can I expect with it? What's realistic for my limited budget? And I'm surprised at what might be available out there for people to have assistance beyond simply meeting with somebody who's investing their money. You just gave a little anecdote that I know is representative of other things, similar things that you do with your clients. And my purpose here is not to Grant or Todd, either one of you, to flatter you. You're here because I am impressed with you and your business. But I want to believe that in other cities, and y'all are based in Louisville, in other cities like St. Louis and Midwestern cities maybe especially, that there are other people who might have the ability to give more than just a meeting and some financial discussion to help people navigate these things in their life. And I know you did that, you've done that, I know directly you two have done that with clients. And I don't see how it's done economically. Because these are often not real wealthy people. I know you have wealthy clients, but I know that you also have some clients who are not real wealthy. I don't know how you afford to do that.
Yeah. You know, Grant might be a great person to answer some of that. And let me lead in with Grant real quick, because in our business, it's kind of unheard of, but Grant's grandfather worked for Hilliard Lyons. Grant's dad came into business, works for Hilliard Lyons. And now Grant is the third generation in Hilliard Lyons. So it's not always about the money. Grant, would you talk a little bit about, you know, how that works?
Yeah, thanks. And thank you all for having us. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there's when we go back to the fulfillment, that we do the job not for, you know, the recognition or the money, but it's being there during the difficult times. Just last week, a neighbor came over and said, you know, did you get a call from this client? And I said, I did not. What happened? Well, you know, there was an incident, her husband's in the hospital. And so, you know, I was able to head over there and visit with them and make sure that was fine. You know, and it's the little things, I think, that really make a difference in helping someone feel more comfortable in their situation. And that's why we do it. We want to add comfort, the peace of mind, So whereas we may not get fully compensated by every client, overall, with a successful business model, a team approach, we're able to kind of stretch when somebody needs us, and I think that's what makes it meaningful work. So I think that, the news is full of so much negative stuff every day, and you may only hear about advisors who are not doing the right thing, but really they're...
Yeah, they dominate. They're the mm-hmm. ones who make it to the top of the headlines.
Unfortunately so, but there's so many good ones, just like in every industry, that kind of fly under the radar, but hopefully make a difference each day. So we enjoy what we do, and just feel fortunate that we have the trust of many people who need our help.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that maybe that's what we should tell our listeners to look for is somebody who you believe is doing what they're doing because they really enjoy that helping people aspect, as well as the financial management. And we have to assume most people prefer to make more money than less. So we have to assume that some part of the reason they do what they do is because they want to earn money. I think it's naive to think anything else. But for many, it stops there, meaning that's the entire reason they're doing what they're doing. And I think to find a financial manager who regards themselves as something more than a person who dispenses financial advice, and I can tell you the vast majority of people in this industry, that's the only way they define their purpose. I don't want to cast a shadow on your industry, but it's simply true, and you're nodding your heads. You probably don't disagree that it's mm-hmm. very common. But to have somebody who sees their role in a larger way, as I'm going to go to the hospital. There's been this, this crisis in the family, and I saw this with you, Todd. You showed mm-hmm. up at the hospital with a family member of mine. So that's the sort of thing that people don't even know that they might accomplish or find in a financial advisor, but they're out there.
I think it's there's a lot of them too. I don't think it's the few. I mean, if you talk to people who've been in the business a long time, they'll tell you about their clients who, had a tough time and they were there to help them out. I would say that's more the norm than not. I really mm-hmm. believe that.
Todd, where would someone find, a good advisor locally to them? I mean, advisors can work in different cities, but if someone was searching, would you start maybe in your church or ask maybe somebody that you respected their opinion, if they know of somebody good, or would you look maybe for a financial planner, and search for someone with a certain credential?
Yeah, the CFP organization does have a website where you can go and say, hey, I want a CFP in this city, and they'll show you the people who've earned that designation. That doesn't mean that they're the best financial planner. It just means they've got the designation, which means that they have committed themselves to study and learning a little bit more than most. But I think, referrals are the biggest thing. If you're working with somebody and they do a great job for you, you're going to say, hey, let's use those people. I think that's the best way to find it. And then the other thing, and I hate to say this because young people have got to build their business some way or other, but when you're first in the business, and I just know from my experience, I mean, you've got to produce or you don't have any money at the end of the month. I mean, it is you eat what you kill.
So you've got to generate some revenue.
You've got to. And so someone who is more established can do the peripheral things like we do because we don't have to generate we have a revenue stream already kind of built in, but we're not just starting out.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're not kind people. I'm just saying that they have to be out there booking, and they're not going to be able to go do these things during the day when they need to be on the phone trying to generate income.
Well, it's funny we're having this conversation because Wall Street Journal had an article just within the last week in which it talked about the fact that financial advisors are reaching out to play a larger role in people's lives. And there are some financial incentives to do that, but it was also talking about more in the way that we're talking about here. So I think that they recognize that to the extent that they become that central figure mm-hmm. in their clients' lives, that's good for everybody. It's good for them, and it's good for their clients. So there is a trend for financial advisors to see that there's this vacuum in people's lives, especially as they retire, where they need this central figure. And lawyers wanted to be that figure, but lawyers are expensive, to have in that role. as the person who's kind of interacting with all these others, because often they're billing by the hour to do that. And meanwhile, insurance guys have always been raising their hand, you know, saying, pick me, pick me. But many people aren't comfortable with the insurance industry in that role. There's just not the comfort or, dare I say, the trust. But so it seems that a financial advisor may be that solution that is a 21st century really phenomenon in a big way.
It's a natural progression, though, because, you know, money is necessary. And people need that in order to have security. And they look at us not just as a financial advisor, but as that life, like you were saying, a life coach. You know, especially if a spouse has passed away and you're not used to paying the bills, who does that for you? Because now you might be a little bit too old to really jump back into the water and understand how to do that. You know, should I buy the cars? You know, should I put on a new deck? We become that person, their sounding board. We don't make the decisions for them, but we're objective enough to give them the information they need to make an educated decision. But, you know, they always have their own, you know, mind, and they make those decisions for themselves. But we're kind of like the go-to person for that reason, and it seems to work out pretty good.
And it helps that the financial advisor is going to have familiarity with this circle of things. I know the contents of the Certified Financial Planner test, which is not easy. It's a number of hours of testing and a lot of preparation. Now it requires virtually like a master's. It's kind of like a CPA. CPA now requires essentially a master's degree and extra hours before you qualify to take it. And I think now the CFP's gone to that.
It's a lot.
But the point is that the content of their exam includes like insurance, securities, retirement plans. In other words, it's a full circle of things that touch directly and indirectly on financial matters. One thing I want to talk about before we take a break here, or should we talk after the break?
Let's talk after the break.
Okay, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, what I'd like to do is touch on how is this compensated? Give our listeners an idea of how they're likely to pay somebody who's a financial advisor. Is it a percentage of their funds? Is it on hourly billing? And what are the pros and cons of that? So we're going to take a break, back in a few moments. This is Elder Talk.
You're listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Okay, we're back with Elder Talk. And with us today, Todd Etkin and Grant Roberts, financial advisors, consultants, certified financial planners, et cetera.
All kinds of initials after their names.
Full of information. Guests we've had in the past that were very popular, and they were willing to come back. We appreciate that. They're based in Louisville, Kentucky, though they have clients around the country. Going into the break, we were discussing the subject of billing or how do people pay for financial services. So let's assume that we're talking about a financial advisor who might be talking to clients about a whole lot of different things. You know, they might be giving them advice about insurance. They may be talking about their own investments, mutual funds, whatever it might be. What can people expect in terms of billing and the way it's billed? Are services billed by the hour? Are they billed based on a percentage of the money that's managed? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, can I take that one? Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And like you mentioned, you know, any professional advice has a cost, you know, CPAs and attorneys. And so there are some advisors out there. So I guess big picture is it can be done a lot of different ways. So ask the question if it's a new relationship or perhaps if it's an old relationship. You know, it's fair for a client to ask their advisor how are they getting compensated. So there are some advisors who do it on an hourly rate. We talked earlier about financial planning, and sometimes, you know, just putting a financial plan in place might have a charge, you know, of $1,500, $2,000, depending on your market, you know, more or less, right?
Or it might be expressed. In other words, if it's like $1,500, then it's being expressed as a flat fee, right?
Sure. So then there could be a flat fee on assets under management where a financial plan kind of comes as part of the total package, where the plan is going to actually lead the decisions. It's going to be goal-based. So you're going to say, well, how much, you know, based on your needs, do you need to generate a year? How risky do we need to be with investments? That may kind of help guide us in the decisions from that point forward. So a lot of times we'll start with a financial plan to see, you know, where do we need to get to and you know, which road do we take?
So you're saying that would be included with the fee that you charge per ask for the assets?
That's right. And a lot of times, Todd, that would be like 1% of assets under management. You know, it may be slightly more if it's, say, under $500,000. It may be slightly less than 1% if, you know, over $1 million or two. But that kind of depends on the advisor's model. You know, and so that's fair to talk about it. If more assets are added, you know, would that fee fall from 1% to, you know, 0.9%? Or for some who may not need all the services, they might just want to do a few trades. It's kind of the old school model where they, you know, wouldn't really expect somebody to show up to the hospital. They wouldn't be expecting the additional services. Is just kind of on a commission basis, which is a pay per trade. And you kind of envision maybe your grandpa reading the paper, seeing that, you know, Pepsi is up and Coke is down, and they're going to call their advisor and want to direct the trade themselves. But most people these days are willing to pay for that additional advice because there are a lot of options. And when we're talking about retirement, you know, you want to make sure you've kind of got that plan in place.
The online platforms, though, seem to appeal to that person who's wanting to minimize cost to the bare skeleton. In other words, they're wanting no advice, no services. They're wanting an execution of an order. And there are, like Schwab and other companies, that have decided they want to appeal to that person. But that person doesn't have a financial advisor. They simply have a means to execute an order.
That's correct.
And that's the sort of robo-services you describe. And I don't want to put those down. For somebody who's really a skilled investor, I'm sure that's fine. But it does trouble me as a professional. I appreciate the value of professionals. And when I see somebody who is determined to do a complicated legal matter and they're trying to avoid using a lawyer, it bugs me because it just seems like an irrational thing. It seems like that somebody is so determined to squeeze everything they can out of their money that it's unflattering to them. I guess maybe that's the way I would put it.
Do you think, though, that it's trying to save the money, or is it that they don't see the value of the advice, or they're confident in their own decisions?
It's all those things.
Okay.
They're
a little bit different. But. Mm-hmm.
But you're right. They are a little different, and I suspect they tend to travel together, those three motives. So I think that this, like lots of things in life all around us, is that when you want advice that's tailored for you and your situation, you're not going to get it in an automated digital process like that online. And so for those listening, though, who simply want that execution, they're probably familiar with that option. But I don't think that they're familiar with – many people are not familiar with what we've been talking about here, which is the chance to have this sort of advisor, this very central advisor in your life who has familiarity with all those important financial and indirectly financial domains of your life and can give you advice that's tailored to your particular goals and objectives. That's what you can't get for a few cents on per trade online.
Yeah, and you know, a big thing about the trade online, and a big thing that we do, is we manage people's emotions. Because you lose money in the market when you sell when it's down. If you can wait and let it come back up, then 9 times out of 10, you're going to make your money back and you're not going to lose any money. So having someone who has been there before, they're not going to say, gosh, you know, the news came out and this happened, all of a sudden the market drops. And that's when everybody gets worried, and that's when they start selling. And then they start buying back once it's up another 1,000 points, and they say, now let's get back in it, and then you buy it back. So those robocops don't do that for you. They don't manage your money, your emotion, and say, wait a minute, we've been here before. Don't worry about it. You know, we set up your portfolio like this, and the reason we did it, because we have so much over here and it's safe. We have so much here that's a little more aggressive. We're going to be fine.
Yeah.
That's a good point. If I could add, so going back to just one part of the plan in preparing for retirement, so Todd is always really good to point out holding enough cash. Because if you've got some cash on hand, it may be 1 to 2 years of living expenses, less guaranteed sources of income. But if you've got that cash on hand, that goes back to Todd's current point that you can wait out a market, decline. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of market movement right now. You've got some tweets coming out. We're working on, you know, some trade deals, interest rate concerns. But these are just the current headlines, right? And if you go back in history, there's always been current headlines that have been concerning. But as long as you can wait out, you know, whatever it is, and the markets kind of stabilize, you know, they may swing to the extremes, but eventually, you know, the sound economic data will continue to push the markets higher. At least history has shown us that. So I think that if you can wait it out and have cash on hand, you pull from that during the time when the markets are down. And then once they're back up with your advisor, you make the plan to then replenish some of that cash. And that's kind of a good strategy because you haven't lost anything when the market's down unless you have to sell, right?
And the idea, though, of paying either by the hour or paying 1%, if that were the number, to include advice such as this as well as related advice in your life, such as those things about health care and insurance and how am I going to pay for long-term care and what about issues relating to insurance and even some issues relating to estate planning that are not purely legal. So I think that many people don't realize that for a comparatively little cost, they can have that sort of life partner, that life advisor that's going to be able to partner with them through these unknown times and these very uncertain and very vulnerable times.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a lot of risks when you're 40, as we've talked about many times in the show, and make some dumb mistakes and still, you know, pick yourself up and dust yourself off. But it's just more difficult to do that when you're 75 or 80. So the idea that you are willing to commit some portion of your money for professional advice makes sense to me.
And the other part about it, you know, when you have an advisor that is charging you a fee on your assets, they're on the same side of the table as you are. If the market goes down, they make less money. If the market goes up, they make more money. So they're not going to be calling you and saying, hey, we need to trade this because they need an extra income for that month. They're going to be calling because you know it's in your best interest.
So is there sometimes a hybrid option where people can choose to say, okay, I know that I'll be charged a certain percentage management for assets that are invested. And then also for these additional services, you might bill by the hour or in some other way. Is it typical that you break the billing out into two separate methods?
Yeah, I think so. It depends on the needs of the client and of that particular account. In a lot of cases, you know, someone may retire, value the advice beyond investing, and would bring over, you know, a retirement account they want us to manage. But then they may have another account, which is more cash and bonds. Maybe it's old family holdings that have a very low cost to it. And really, it would be, from a tax standpoint, we wouldn't trade those unless there was just a big reason to do so, right? Because they'd realize a bunch of tax if it was sold. And so we'll try to exclude that from fee, right? Or have one account that's, you know, fee-based and one that's not. So I think it's just whatever's in the client's best interest.
But I think what Joe was asking is, can you get a lower fee, and then if you need those extra services, can you buy them or, you know, pay an extra fee for that? You know, just from our experience, we don't do that. We're all in. You're a client of ours. We're going to give you that service. We're going to charge you 1% or whatever it might be in that area, and you're going to get everything. We're going to do everything we possibly can to make sure that you're going to live the rest of your life and you're going to be somewhat financial, worry-free, and we're going to do those things for you. I'm sure there's other people who do it differently than we do. but that's what we do. So I really can't, I don't think we can talk about what other people might do as far as if they add those services. I'm sure people do it because it's a necessary evil, and I think people need that those services.
Yeah, yeah.
But and we do farm it out, too. Like, we don't write documents. We're not lawyers. And so if someone has an estate issue, you know, we'll say, hey, we think this is what you need to do. And then we bring that professional who really does it in and say, they're the ones get paid to do that. We don't pay them. The client pays that. You're an insurance person. We'll say, hey, we think you have a need. We have a risk here. We'll bring an insurance person in and say, you know, what, you know, the ones that really know what the exact policy should be. And they're the ones going to say, yeah, do this. But, you know, they pay for those things.
Yeah. Which I think they would expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, that
so.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea, though, is to be sure that somebody is responsible for or at least is helping with all these things that become more difficult with every passing decade to manage and track.
That's right. And I think, too, it's important to keep the perspective of if you're thinking about the cost and, you know, can you afford this additional care? And maybe you've worked your whole life and you've built up, you know, $600,000, $1 million in retirement assets invested in your 401k at work. Most likely it's in mutual funds. And those have an embedded cost. You may not be, you know, paying that out of pocket each
year. Yeah, that's a good point.
Each year. So when you compare that, you know, a lot of mutual funds may be a half of a percent versus, you know, coming to a full service advisor at 1%, well, all the additional resources you're getting should.
No comparison for a half a percent.
And investment performance should be better than that, make up that half a percent. Hmm. So
that makes sense to me. Have we gone through an hour, Susan?
We have about a minute and a half left.
A minute and a half. So how should we use this minute and a half? Why don't we talk about, we talked about this threshold when people are looking at retirement. Do you find that most people should get a regular job for purposes of being fulfilled, and it also would solve a financial problem? Can you answer that in a minute and a half?
I can, because it depends on the person. You know, we've had people who are used to staying-at-home moms, or you know, they're used to it, so they kind of transition right away, or it might be a stay-at-home dad. But someone who is high-profile, I think those are the people who need that whatever it is, that recognition.
Interaction with people.
With people. It may not be a paying job, but there are so many volunteer situations you can get in. Or you can become your own person. You can look around, find somebody who needs help doing something and do that. But you just have to have a reason to get out of that bed, and I cannot stress that enough.
Mm-hmm. And men are probably more prone than women to allow themselves to withdraw. That's my opinion, just based on what I've seen. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that.
I do.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and it's almost like you have to resist those forces, or you become isolated, and it all these health consequences we've all heard about that result from that.
Well, that's a big thing we didn't talk about is the health part. You're talking about retirement. I mean, you better be going to the gym. You better be eating right because, gosh, you lose your health. I don't care what age you are. You don't have a very good retirement. And I think men need to seek that out.
So we'll be picking up with some of these topics in the next show. Thankfully, we're going to have you guys back again for the next show, and we appreciate your willingness to do this.
Are you flying us in this time?
Well, we were looking for a freight carrier that could get us a discount rate, but we're working on that. Anyway, it's been a wonderfully helpful and I think entertaining discussion. And we'll pick this up again next time. This has been another episode of Elder Talk. Till then, take care.
You've been listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.